You're listening to a podcast of spurious morality.
Hello and welcome to a podcast of spurious morality. I'm Johnston, and with me this week I have Greg.
Waking or sleeping.
And I have Jimmy.
Beginning of the end, boys.
I feel as though I've missed out by not doing something myself now, but I think I'll just be a bit anticlimactic, like the King's Demons, and that can be my season 20 tribute. So yes, we're doing season by season. We are doing season by season 20. We're going to look at we're doing it in slightly uneven halves. We're looking at our first uneven half today. We're going to go from Arc of Infinity through to Terminus, and then we'll return in the near future for the final few stories, including the Five Doctors. We're counting the Five Doctors. If it's good enough for the Blu-ray, it is good enough for us. So as ever, I'm going to ask you guys what your favourite story of this season is. Do you want to go first, Jimmy?
Yeah, I definitely would have to say Enlightenment. It's been a while since I last rewatched it, so my opinion might change, but it's been my favourite Fifth Doctor, not just of this season, but of all his TV stories for quite a while now, so I doubt that'll change.
It's definitely a cracker, yeah. What about you, Greg?
Well, my favourite story is The Five Doctors. It's the one I've seen the most, I think, of any Doctor Who story. And, I mean, for obvious reasons, it's, you know, just intended for fans, and I'm a huge fan, and that's what it's for. In terms of the best story of the season, I think Enlightenment's very good, although I'm inclined to lean towards Snake Dance.
I mean, Snake Dance is absolutely excellent, and I definitely think, and this is not going to be the last time I say this episode, that it is infinitely superior to Kinder as well. I'm going to go with something different. I'm going to go with Mordred Undead. I think it's absolutely wonderful. I think it does an amazing job of bringing back the Brigadier, does something interesting with the character, introduces Turlough and begins the Black Guardian trilogy. I think it's just a great story. It's even got a wonderful soundtrack. Paddy Kingsland, absolutely on fire. I think not just my favourite of the season, I think there's a case I could make for it being my favourite Fifth Doctor story overall, Mordred Undead. But let's start with a trip to Amsterdam. We're going to do Arc of Infinity. This one gets a bit of slack. It's possibly the weakest of the season. I think some people will definitely successfully convince me that it is if they talk to me about it for long enough. But I think it does have some sort of strengths as well. I really, really like, and it's a good job I do, because Big Finish have massively capitalised on this, the Fifth Doctor and Nyssa getting some alone time. Like the first episode, it's just the Fifth Doctor and a single companion, and I think it works particularly well. I think it sort of really lets both characters sort of shine. We've not got the Petulant Child and the Argumentative One here, and I think it works really well. I'm glad it brings Tegan back, but I'm glad it takes its time to bring Tegan back and we get a bit of, like I say, Fifth Doctor and Nyssa time beforehand. Gallifrey is used quite effectively. I think it's rather quite well done. it's maybe not as good as Gallifrey was depicted in Deadly Assassin or in The Invasion of Time, but I like it. We've still got all of the bureaucracy and the backstabbing and that kind of thing, and sort of continues the theme of the Time Lords being actually a bit naff, really. Colin Baker's in it as Commander Maxill. I am amazed that Big Finish have not done a Sixth Daughter meets Maxill story. It just seems to be the most obvious low-hanging fruit that they have yet to pick.
I think they did have Maxill pop up for a line or two in Gallifrey at one stage. I'm not 100% sure if I'm remembering right, but I think that happened.
Yes, it's literally a line or two. And he's sort of mentioned in Gallifrey as well, some point in the first three series, he's sort of mentioned and has that little cameo. But yeah, I just think, why have they not sort of leapt for the whole Colin Baker playing two characters thing? I thought that maybe be something they'd be all over. Amsterdam, great setting, interesting setting for Doctor Who story. I've been to Amsterdam. It's a very nice city. It's sort of a very nice place to walk around. And that seems to be all that really happens in Ark of Infinity. They go to Amsterdam and they walk around it for a bit. I'm glad that we're keeping the tradition of sort of doing filming outside of the UK going. But I really don't think Amsterdam is as integral to this as Paris was to City of Death. I think that's a bit of a shame, really. Like, we've got the location, but do we really need the location? But that, it doesn't matter too much. It's a nice setting. It's nice to see Doctor Who go somewhere else. And it was nice to try and spot the odd familiar location when I went there a couple of years ago. So all in all, Ark of Infinity, definitely flawed, definitely not great. I really don't think it's a fantastic return for Omega after the Three Doctors, but you know what, they had a go, they updated the character a bit. There's a few things I've not mentioned, like a sort of certain chicken-like alien, but I'm assuming that one of you two is going to absolutely tear into that in a moment, so let's see if I'm right. You go first, Greg.
I mean, the chicken is terrible. I'll grant you that. Ark of Infinity is not the best. It's despite the fact that it does something that I generally love in a Doctor Who story, which is actually use the time travel, space travel nature of the show to have a story set over multiple times and or locations. Here, Amsterdam present day and Gallifrey at whatever time the Gallifrey stories are set. It just kind of drags. For all that there's a sense of urgency in the writing, it doesn't really come across on screen. It just seems a little bit slow, which is unfortunate because there's good ideas here. I mean, I think, they've got this 20th season objective that they're going to bring something back from the show's past in every single story. And okay, so we're doing Omega in this one and Gallifrey, and that's great. Because he was the villain in the 10th anniversary. And the idea that, he's found a way once again to escape the universe of antimatter makes perfect, it is a sure, why not? Sure, he's created a corporeal form again. He's, trying to insert himself into our universe. One thing I find a little odd is that he was, trapped in the antimatter universe when he was causing the creation of the Eye of Harmony, which would be the power source for the TARDISes. Not really sure why or how he now has his own TARDIS. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me, but I don't know, maybe he just somehow knew to put the little roundels in the walls, just like the Time Lords did when they designed them. But that's a minor point. I think this, it's fun for Peter Davison because he gets to, play evil version of himself at the end. It's fun to see, Colin Baker show up with the knowledge now that he'll become the Sixth Doctor. It's fun to go back to Gallifrey. It's nice, you know, we get Tegan back after the little head fake at the end of Time Flight. Like you said, we do get to see a little bit of just the Doctor and Nyssa at the beginning. I like how it, you know, fleshes Tegan out a little bit. Oh, she has cousins, you know, it's, we don't often see, especially in the classic series, you know, companions having actual family members or relations, but with Tegan, we've seen her aunt, we've seen cousins, so I wonder if these are related to Aunt Vanessa at all. That's never really thought about that until right now. I don't know. For Arc of Infinity, I mean, I look at it as like, it's fun, it's entertaining in so far as like, there's all this, you know, stuff happening that you can point at and say, oh, that's cool. But in terms of the actual story, it's just not very exciting. And I agree too that, I mean, while it is cool that they filmed in Amsterdam, like Amsterdam isn't as, you know, immediately recognizable as Paris is, like City of Death. And whereas, you know, City of Death, the last shot is them, you know, walking away on the lawn away from the Eiffel Tower. You know, here the final confrontation takes place on some docks in a canal. And it's like, okay, you know, that's cool, I guess, but that's hardly like, oh, the iconic view. So I don't know. I think there's a lot of missed opportunity here, but I think there's also just a lot of, you know, enjoyable little notes that are there for you to pick up on. And I mean, I like the idea of it moving between a couple of different times. I like Gallifrey stories in general, but I don't know. I think this one just, it drags a bit, and the story itself, once you get rid of all the extraneous stuff, just isn't very compelling.
Yeah, I think it is easy to kind of pinpoint where this story falls apart, and that is indeed the story. It just kind of doesn't quite do what it needs to do, and I think it's actually a bit thin on the ground. But it's obviously one of those stories that's being created via shopping list. You know, well, we've got Amsterdam, we've got Gallifrey, we've got Omega. It's kind of, That's not every writer's dream, is it, to have that kind of dumped on them, I guess. Jimmy, where do you stand on Arc of Infinity?
I mean, for me, it's definitely the dud of the season, but it's not, like, terrible completely in any way. Like, there's lots of good little things, and I definitely agree with you. The best part is that it gave that gap for the Doctor and Nyssa to have more adventures in the audios, because I love their dynamic together, and even in just the first episode of this, before Tegan gets back, you can see how well they work as a pair without all the extra characters. And Nyssa's really good in this story. Again, I think when she tries to rescue the Doctor before the Time Lords try to execute him, and it's so weird. Most of her stories, she's so calm and rational, but Keeper of Traken and this, she's like, let's go in all guns blazing. And it's a bit weird, but it kind of works. And I do love that Nyssa gets to show more emotion over the Doctor's supposed death than she actually did over the destruction of her entire planet. And it comes across at first like, oh, they're going to have her be a bit more emotionally open. She's a bit more, you know, realistic. But then she has far less reaction when she's told the Doctor's actually alive, or when she hears that Tegan's back. And so that sort of detracts a bit. Tegan being back is another good thing. Like, they did a good job of reintroducing her and giving her the family and all that. And I like that she's finally out of the silly work costume, because she's not expecting to go back to work in 5 minutes. And so it's nice to have her looking a bit more normal. The dynamic with her and Nyssa at the end, when they are so ecstatic to be, oh, I'm coming back into TARDIS, I've lost my job, isn't it great, Doctor? And he's like, oh, yeah. And then the camera goes just a little bit too long, and you see him starting to frown just as the titles cut in. Like, I'm not sure whether it was intentional or bad editing, but that moment is hilarious. What else? Damon comes out of nowhere. It's a bit weird to be like, oh, and here's the Doctor's old friend Damon, and like, just do nothing with it. Like, he could have just been a random Time Lord, but yeah, that was a bit odd. And yeah, definitely Yurgon was another weird looking, like, I don't get what they were going for with that. Like, even the gel guards in Omega's last appearance were better than this. And as you were saying about Omega, I think, like, yeah, he is a bit different here, but at least it's still recognisable as the same character. I mean, at least they didn't say turn him into a giant skull for some reason. Who'd do that? but yeah, I do quite enjoy this. But I think the end, they sort of wasted Omega a bit in that last bit, because, like, he's just got his new body and he's like, ha, and I'll see you on Gallifrey and destroy it. And then he just sort of walks out and goes for a stroll around Amsterdam. Like, he's not even trying to get back to Gallifrey. He just goes off for a wander. Like, what the hell's going on? But, you know, despite all that, it's still pretty good, and it's nice to see Michael Goff again. It's just a shame they wasted him a bit, like all the constant shots of his hand doing silly things and the pitched-up voice to hide that it's him, even though it's kind of obvious even before they reveal it. And, yeah, the other odd thing is Tegan's cousin and his friend. I just find it so weird. It's like, hey, let's go sleep in a cemetery. Oh, why aren't you taking off your shoes? Like, you can just see if Omega didn't turn up, it's going to get to, oh, come on, why are you keeping on your shirt? Why are you keeping on your pants? But no, it's a bit ridiculous hiding in a crypt for your holiday, but hey, whatever. It's still a good story overall, and it's nice to have the team back together. It's, yeah, it's just never going to be the best of the season, but it's still enjoyable enough.
So that was Arc of Infinity, and it's a perfectly serviceable season opener, if nothing else. And I think I'm in agreement with Jimmy that it kind of, it's the low point of the season, so it is all sort of better from here.
I only just realised I did forget one other thing that was hilariously bad that I've got to say something about. Impulse laser has to be the silliest last words in the show. Like, you can just imagine it going in other stories and delivery like that. Like, gun? Knife?
It's, yeah, it's a funny script, Arc of Infinity. It's a very, very strange script. But it functions, it works, and sometimes that's all we need it to do. Let's move on. Let's have a look at Snake Dance, which, as I said earlier, I think is absolutely brilliant. I think it's one of the strongest stories of the Fifth Doctor era. I think it's a sequel that completely outshines the previous story, Kinder. The Mara is used incredibly well. Again, far better here than Kinder. The snake at the end still looks awful, but that's just something we're going to have to accept with the two Mara stories in the classic era. All in all, though, I'm a big fan of this one. Having brought Tegan back, we sort of send her off here because she doesn't do an awful lot for big chunks of this story. So we kind of get more of that Fifth Doctor and Nyssa TARDIS team, which I quite like. It's, you know, I don't know whether it's a coincidence or what, but we actually have two stories on the bounce where Nyssa is definitely the primary companion, which is particularly interesting when you consider that on paper this is Tegan's story, you know, as was Kinder. But I think in both of them, because she spends big chunks of it possessed and sitting around waiting for the villain to do things, It tends to be the other companion that shines. It was Adric in Kinder, and it's Nyssa in this one. Martin Clunes is in it, very, very young Martin Clunes. One of the first things he ever did, he's gone on to be like a staple of British television. The man is unavoidable if you watch telly in the UK now. But this is always the one that gets shown to him at, you know, chat shows and that kind of thing. Ooh, here's that Doctor Who clip from the 80s where you're dressed in a really, really silly hat. But yeah, it's. I think this is just a good story. I think it's interesting. I do think that, you know, there are bits of it where some characters do sit around not doing anything, and the Doctor spends a good chunk of this one imprisoned as well. But it doesn't sort of particularly ruin anything. So yeah, all in all, interesting story, lot to enjoy, and it's a very, very successful return for the Mara. Talk to us about Snake Dance, Greg.
Just to start off, I think it's kind of funny that this has become this way to mock Martin Clunes, because yes, his costumes in this are somewhat ridiculous, but he's really good here. Like, I think he plays that part incredibly well. I love this story. I think it takes everything, all the potential of Kinda, and turns it into something much more cohesive, much more understandable. I think the problem with Kinda is that it's throwing all this philosophy at you, but it's not really bringing it together into a sensible whole, whereas this story does nothing but that. First of all, in terms of structure, right? Like, Tegan and her encounter with the Mara in Kinda is primarily just her sitting under some wind chimes and having visions in her head. Here, I mean, we do have the visions, but it's very obvious very quickly what's going on, and she's, as possessed by the Mara, she's an active participant in pretty much the entire story. She's the devil on the shoulder. She's the snake in the Garden of Eden, basically. And Janet Fielding's performance here is phenomenal. Like, one of the, you know, probably the best, like, possessed companion performance we've gotten. I mean, she's great in this. I love what the story does with the doctor here, because it's an opportunity, first of all, to kind of see him from the outsider's perspective. Like, he definitely comes across here as just another madman ranting about the Mara. And, you know, you have to think, like, we're so used as fans to seeing the doctor and companions show up and, oh, we're here to help, and within like 5 minutes everyone's trusting them and moving along. But here you can actually see what it would really be like if the doctor, you know, showed up. It's, you know, what seems just like a regular old ceremony, you know, an annual tradition. And here, you know, and here's this guy showing up and saying, oh, we're all gonna die, you know, the Mara is back, and people are, what, who, like, what are you talking about, go away. And I think Peter Davison's Doctor works well, simply because, like, he is not as good of an actor as he is. He's not the commanding presence of, you know, Tom Baker or John Pertwee. So, you know, I think it's a mistake to try to have his Doctor come in and, you know, take over with the force of his personality. And that is the opposite of what happens here. And so I think that works really well. I think the Mara here is used fantastically well. I really like the world building that they do. I mean, we're on a planet that used to be ruled by the Mara. Like, that's fantastic. I think that they really flesh out the history. Like, I love the little puppet show that they do that kind of shows you what's going on there. And then, you know, I think the first story, you know, kind of hinted in the direction of Buddhist themes. This one actually goes for it, you know, actually telling people to find a still point, meditation, you know, that sort of thing. And it's, you know, it's also a story about, you know, the importance of facing your own fears. I mean, ultimately, this story is about Tegan coming to terms with what happened to her in Kinda. And, you know, to have that kind of, like, sensitive, character-driven idea behind a story is rare in the classic series. And, you know, lastly, just the whole atmosphere of it, I think this is the Enlightenment does this somewhat, but I feel like this is heralding the end of, you know, what was the Bid Meat era of Doctor Who. And, you know, after this, we're going to start heading into the, you know, the Eric Sayward direction, because you don't get very many of these, like, thoughtful scientific stories going forward. You get a lot more of the hard-bitten bleak stuff. But, anyway, yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot I've forgotten to mention, but I really like Snake Dance. Like, I think it's a rare it's a rare sequel in Doctor Who. It's a rare sequel that improves unquestionably on the first story, and it's just great. I love it.
Yeah, I think it's one with a lot to offer, and it like you say, it just sort of takes the groundwork that Kinder laid and really, really does run with it and explore things a little bit deeper and give Tegan more to do. And yeah, it's absolutely cracking. Jimmy, what do you think of it?
Yeah, most of this story I really love. I think it's a lot better than Kinder, and that's not to say Kinder was bad, but this is just on a whole nother level. It's so nice to, as you say, see Nyssa and the Doctor's dynamic again, with Tegan being, well, not so much sidelined because she's important in the story, but she's possessed for most of it, so Nyssa gets to be the main one again. And I think their dynamic together is great, and it also worked well with that Chella. He made a great sort of temporary companion to take Tegan's place while she was possessed. So that was a nice touch. I think there's some great world building. They really set this planet up well, and its history and all that. It's really well done. And both Janet Fielding as Tegan and Martin Clunes as Lon, they both give a great performance when they're not possessed, but they both take it up a notch when they're possessed. Namara is so much more creepy and dangerous in this story. It just feels so much more powerful and so much more in control, and I think it really works well. I also like the touch of, they've got the pantomime snake that they're sort of taking down the road, and it's almost like they're poking fun at Kinder. It's like, oh, look, the crappy puppet snake is actually a crappy puppet this time. Like, but the actual Mara itself is feeling so much more powerful. It just seemed like, you know, like they could poke fun at themselves while still building on what they did before and making it even better. So that worked really well. One of the few little things I'd pick at is some of the costumes. Like, most of the costumes in this story were really great. I think they built that world really well. But, of course, the cloud tunic that Martin Flynn's had to wear is so silly. And, like, you can just about buy it because it's part of a big silly ceremony thing, but it does look a bit ridiculous. And Nyssa finally gets a new costume for the first time, and it's just rubbish. Like, I don't know what they were going for there. It's not very good. But, yeah, other than those little quibbles, I think they really did a good job of this story. The other one that they realised well, but they sort of stuffed it a little bit, was that snake skull taking the place of Tegan's face in the mirrors. It looks really wonderful and really creepy at first, but then when it starts talking and they move the jaw, and it just looks so silly. Like, if they just kept the mouth of the puppet, the skull shut, it would have looked so much better. But when they tried to make it move while it talked, it just looked a bit silly. The only other thing I'd really pick at the end is it obviously works well in the context of the story at the time, and, you know, not so much all these years later, but the Mara is gone forever. No, sorry, Tegan, it's going to pop up in about, four or five audios, a few short trips, a bunch of short stories. Oh, and the collection track. Yeah, we're never going to be free of it. yeah, as I say, it worked well for the story at the time, but in hindsight, it kind of detracts a little bit.
It's kind of worth mentioning as well that this ends really abruptly. It sort of pushes its runtime as far as possible, to the point where we have to still have a conversation about the Mara next week in Mordred Undead. That opens with Tegan and Nyssa sort of discussing what happened with the Mara and what went on and that kind of thing, which sort of became a bit of a thing in the Fifth Doctor era, I guess. They were trying to serialise a little bit more. So you did have sort of, you know, references to the Doctor having read Black Orchid and recommending it to Adric and Earthshock and that kind of thing. But this genuinely just feels like, yeah, we ran out of time last week, so here's just the end of the conversation that the characters started having at the end when the theme tune crashed in. So yeah, that's kind of my biggest... my biggest sort of problem with this one is just how suddenly it does end when the villain is defeated.
I think part of the issue there is that, like, we don't, as fans, like, we don't really consider, you know, the series as, you know, like season 20, for example. We don't consider it as a series of, what is it, 27 episodes or whatever it is, 28. We consider it a bunch of discrete, you know, entities. Like, we have the story Arc of Infinity, we have the story Snake Dance, we have the story Modern Undead. But, you know, watching the show at the time, it would just be an episode every week, and so, like, it wouldn't feel so abrupt to have, you know, that conversation happen at the top of the next story. Whereas, you know, the way we look at it now, I think changes that a little bit. And, like, for example, if you were watching, you know, just a, you know, any kind of show that's on now, you know, any kind of sitcom, you would be shocked if, you know, one episode didn't reference the events of previous ones in some way. But we just don't look at Doctor Who that way. And I think this is a rare example of it actually, you know, because the show was made of those discrete elements. But yeah, I think I like that, actually. I like that the show acknowledges what's happened before.
Yeah, I think the problem is that you're also sort of keen to get on with the next story. I mean, look at the sort of Adric's dead now hand-waving at the start of Time Flight. It just kind of, maybe we don't get to cover these things in the depth that we do because...
Yeah, I'm not saying it works very well, but yeah.
Yeah, it's a nice idea. But yeah, like, you know, the conversation about the Mara happens at the start of Mordrin Undead. It's great that it does, but also we need to get on with Mordrin Undead now. So I guess that's the, well, that's our cue to get on with Mordrin Undead now, isn't it? So Mordrin Undead, as I've said, it's a favourite of mine. I would call it my favourite of the Fifth Doctor era, certainly favourite of this season. It introduces Turlo, and Turlo is automatically very different from any other companion that we've had. I really, really like the way Turlo's sort of joining the TARDIS is handled, and how it's, you know, how we do have this Black Guardian trilogy. Indeed, the returning villain for the next three stories is the Black Guardian. It's just really good. It's really nice. It has a really strong sort of time travel based idea. It's not very often that Doctor Who plays with time travel as a plot device, but in this one it does, and it does a very good job of it. The settings are great. You know, we have the school, the public school, and we have the spaceship, and the spaceship is genuinely creepy. It's some really, really good set design. Like, they've managed to get the whole sort of alien high class but creepy as hell thrown in together. It's full of wonderful ideas. It's full of, well, the Brigadier not remembering the Doctor because of something that happened in the past, and the Doctor kind of having to unlock that. It does lead to a wonderful scene. I'm a big fan of the flashback as the Brigadier sort of recovers his memories, and then we have to stop the older Brigadier meeting the younger Brigadier thing, and ultimately that ends up being what resolves the story, thanks to a slightly wonky bit of technobabble. I think that's the problem in this one, is it just sort of conveniently resolves itself in the end. So yeah, David Collings as Mordrin is the Doctor that we were robbed of. My God, that episode where he's pretending to be the Doctor, and Tegan and Nyssa buy it, it's just such a brilliant performance. I think it's one of the best guest performances in all Doctor Who, and I honestly believe he'd have been an exceptional Doctor had it ever happened. You know, he's been in other Doctor Who's. He was in Robots of Death, and he was fantastic in that. And he has a fairly small but significant role in I think it's the last episode of Blake 7, actually. Yeah, definitely an actor that I would have liked to have seen as the Doctor. And if you take Mordred on Dedalus's audition tape, I think, yeah, we've missed out on something.
Well, I mean, Big Finish let us hear him as an Unbound Doctor, so that's something.
Indeed, yes. And, you know, Full Fathom 5 is an absolutely fantastic story, and I like what it does with his Doctor. So, yeah, I'm a huge fan of Mordred Undead. It's such a strong start to this Black Guardian trilogy. It's a really strong introduction for Turlough. We get Peter Davison at his most Doctor-ish, you know, when he's interacting with the Brigadier. Mordring's a fantastic... Is villain the right word? I'm not even sure Mordring is a villain, really. There's some nice morally grey stuff going on in this one. But it's just a situation that builds up and builds up and builds up, and it does come to a crescendo. Like I say, it kind of resolves itself, but it's okay. It's the story's not really about the resolution. The story is about, you know, Turlough and the Black Guardian. It's about what the Brigadier is doing now. It's about the Doctor's relationship with time travel and, you know, his own future, his regenerations. Again, you know, using the regeneration limit as a threat in the story is a particularly wonderful idea. Very innovative. And as I said before, Paddy Kingsland's score is just brilliant. I think this is one of the best sounding Doctor Who stories there is. I don't think it's the best. I think that's still Legopolis, but this is definitely a potential second, maybe third, State of Decay and all that. Go on, Greg, talk to us about Mordred Undead.
Oh, I really like Mordred Undead. I think it's an excellent story. I think season 20 is surprisingly good. I don't think it has a fantastic reputation for whatever reason, but I think there's several good stories. This is one of them. What I like about it is this is the one out of the whole season, the five Doctors excluded, of course, that really like grabs the tribute to the series idea and runs with it more than any other. And the reason for that is the Brigadier being the, you know, the central guest character. Now, I know when this story was originally conceived of, it was Ian who was the returning character. And yes, that makes more sense as to why he's, you know, teaching at a school, because he is in fact a teacher. And as wonderful as it would have been to see William Russell, you know, back in the role, I don't think the story would work as well with him, because the Brigadier is the single most significant non-companion guest character in the history of the show. I mean, excluding, you know, recurring villains, like he's got connections to all but one of the previous Doctors at this point. You know, like if you're doing that flashback sequence with Ian, you're doing season one and half of season two, and that's it. Whereas here you're seeing Patrick Troughton, John Pertwee, Tom Baker, you know, you're seeing Daleks and the Master, and it's the Brigadier is the perfect character for this. And, you know, I just like the cute little nod towards the fact that you know, Nick Courtney never actually had the mustache, and so he plays the, you know, present day Brigadier without it, and we can very easily set off the past Brigadier by giving him that mustache back. So I think that works really well. I think Nicholas Courtney's very good in this. I think Peter Davison's very good in this. I think the two of them have really good chemistry. I agree with you about David Collings. I think his performance as Mordred is great, and I love how the story, you know, doesn't establish Mordred as just an out-and-out villain. Like, you can understand and sympathize with him and his people. Like, they really just want to die, and granted, they use highly questionable methods, immoral methods, to get the Doctor to do what they want, but you can understand why they're doing it, though. It's, you know, they're not trying to do anything other than just, you know, end their eternal torment. And you can understand the Doctor's perspective on it, which is, you know, hey, like, you know, being able to regenerate is kind of what makes me who I, you know, part of what makes me who I am. And, you know, you brought this on yourselves. You know, we didn't do this to you. Like, you tried to steal, you know, the secrets of regeneration. So, yeah, I mean, that conflict there, it works well. And I think it, you know, and of course the doctor ultimately decides that he's going to save them. And, you know, that is under duress, but is it the right thing to do? I don't know. I mean, I think that's interesting morally. And then, yeah, and you've also got Turlough introduced here. And, you know, you've got this character who is morally ambiguous himself. Like, they don't, you know, make a secret out of it. Like, pretty much right from the top, you know that he is an alien living on Earth, like, you know, hiding among humans, like, wanting to return home. He probably correctly views himself as smarter than the humans around him. And so, you know, he's arrogant, but at the same time, he's also bored. So, you know, he's manipulating, you know, Hippo and, you know, doing things like stealing the car just for his own amusement, because he's just doesn't have any enjoyment in being on Earth otherwise. And the Black Guardian is able to get to him and exploit his desire to escape and return home. And so, yeah, I mean, a lot of the story is just about unfulfilled desire. And I think that works really well. My only issue with it really is, I don't think they incorporated the Black Guardian very well. I mean, having him as like the devil on Turlough's shoulder is great, but at times they seem to imply that he's kind of worked behind the scenes to put all this together to end the doctor's life. And at other times it seems like he's just randomly there. Like, it's when the first attempt to kill the doctor, right, after all of the, you know, complicated, you know, things happen, and okay, we've set up, we've got this spaceship, it's set in one time zone, there's an escape pod and another one, and then we've got two different, you know, times, and we've got two different brigadiers, and all right, you know, and the doctor's wrapped up all in the middle of this, and then the Black Guardian's grand universal master plan is pick up the rock and hit him with it. It's like, what? And then, like, 5 minutes later, after hit him with a rock fails, it's like, now we will orchestrate the doctor's final humiliation. And it's like, why don't you just pick up another rock? Like, what are you doing? But apart from that, I think the story works really well. And, yeah, I like it. I think it's the best, like, quote-unquote anniversary story of the six in this season. And I think it, yeah, I really like it.
I think the other brilliant thing it does, it doesn't just introduce Turlough, but it leaves questions hanging. And Doctor Who never does this, ever, ever, ever. Classic Doctor Who does not do this. But, like, you know, where is Turlough actually from? Why is he on Earth? None of it's answered at all. And it does get answered in Planet of Fire next season, which I also think is great. More could have been made of it between Mordred Undead and Planet of Fire, but, you know, at least there's genuinely interesting stuff happening with this character that no other companion has had anything like at all. Jimmy, talk to us about Mordred Undead.
It's an interesting one because I definitely enjoyed it, but most of the notes I've made are nitpicks. I mean, speaking of the good stuff, of course, the Brigadier, it's great to have him back. It's a bit disappointing that they sort of stuffed unit chronology with it, but I'm glad it was the Brigadier, because I think if they'd brought back Ian without Barbara and they'd just been like, oh, I haven't seen her since we got back, it would have been so depressing and so disappointing. I do think, apparently I read that they did consider, after Ian didn't work out, but before they decided on the brig, they did consider Harry Sullivan. And I think that would have been interesting to see and would have stuffed the dating less and would have been good to have Ian Martyr back, since we were already going to have the Brigadier for the Five Doctors. But ultimately it is what it is. I think that they did a good job with, as best they could with it, and it was nice to see the Brigadier again. I think also the timey-wimey stuff was really well done here. It's like most of the classic series didn't really do it that often and before it became such a big thing, but having the past and the present Brigadier stuff happening at the same time and the Brigadier remembering stuff as his younger self does it, I think they did a really good job with that. I think that was handled really well. I also agree about Turlough being an interesting character and being introduced very well and very well set up. I think that was handled brilliantly. But yeah, most of my comments are sort of the problems. Like, I did love Nyssa trying to call Tegan out when she was like, oh, no one from Earth would just wander into a travel capsule. And Nyssa's like, well, you did. It's like Tegan's the one who turns out to be right, being suspicious of Turlough, but it's nice to see Nyssa getting one over her there. Another little nitpick is the bit where when the Black Guardian first tells Turlough to kill the Doctor, he's like, you will be destroying one of the most evil people in the universe. And then like 10 minutes later, it's like, destroy the Doctor in the name of all that is evil. And it's like, why did you even try to make it look like, why would he not be still trying to pretend the Doctor's evil, or why just try it from the start if he was just going to reveal himself? It's a bit weird. But also, I would have to say the other thing is with Mordrin's people, the story was very good and the acting was very good, but I think some of it was a bit weird. Like, the costumes were really silly and, like, it really contrasts with how well realised their spaceship was to how silly their costumes looked. And the exposed brain doesn't make much sense. Like, is it supposed to be part of their mutation, or is that just what these aliens are like? Like, it's not very practical. I mean, sure, they're immortal, they can't die, but that's got to cause problems, having your brain sitting on top of your head. And I did like the way their spaceship was realised for the most part, but the gold everywhere just looked so silly and tacky, especially the gold plants. Like, I mean, you could sort of see it as, oh, okay, they're weird, they're posh, whatever, but it just looks a bit ridiculous. The thing I did like with the costumes was reusing the season 18 jacket that Tom had for Mordrin when he was still pretending to be the Doctor. I thought that was a nice little callback. What else? I think another thing, when Tegan and Nyssa got regressed to kids, the kid Tegan was a pretty good match for an adult Tegan, but the kid Nyssa didn't really look like Nyssa at all. It was, you'd think they could have cast someone who had a bit more of a resemblance. The other nitpick I have is a very funny line that just stuck out to me, and like, it's so casual that you don't really think about it, but when Tegan's realising that that Mordrin's not the Doctor, she's like, that thing in the TARDIS, the wounded thing in the TARDIS might not be the Doctor. And it's like, ouch. I mean, okay, you're right, it's not the Doctor, but the wounded thing? Like, it is a person, it's a thing? Like, it just really stuck out to me. It was, a bit of an odd moment. But yeah, I do enjoy the story despite all these quibbles. I think it's a great introduction for Turlough. I just, it's certainly not a favourite of the Fifth Doctor or of the season, but it's not a bad one either. I do enjoy it for all its faults.
Yeah, it's one of those that I enjoy what's going on so much that I'm more than happy to overlook the odd little failings in logic and that kind of thing. I think something you both touched on, actually, though, that is a fair point, is the Black Guardian could have been handled an awful lot better. And I think that actually the next story, Terminus, does handle him a little bit better because he's not in it as much. So we'll move on to Terminus now. Now, Terminus is one of those stories, I think, that a lot of people just sort of go, it's a bit boring, there's over-the-top acting, not a great monster in it, blah, blah, blah. But I think at its heart, Terminus is actually a very strong horror story, which Doctor Who doesn't do very often. We've had sort of gothic horror quite a lot in the early Tom Baker era, but that's not what this is doing. It's really creepy. Like, it looks creepy. It looks, well, the nature of the story, everything is meant to look a bit old and knackered and, you know, like it's falling apart. And that is creepy. That's what it is. You know, haunted houses are just old, knackered, falling apart houses, that kind of thing. So I think it does a really, really good job of that. It's very downbeat. It feels very sort of hopeless in places. And, you know, it's from the very start, the way that the regulars are separated from the TARDIS is, you know, it's not your normal Doctor Who. The TARDIS doesn't land somewhere. The TARDIS sort of clings on to its nearest location for dear life because it's falling to pieces. As I said, the Black Guardian's in this less, but I think that's down to sort of Turlough and Tegan being in this less. Turlough in particular, Black Guardian, obviously. They do seem to spend the whole thing just sort of crawling through ducts. It kind of sidelines them because this is Nyssa's story, this is Nyssa's departure. So Nyssa is the priority, and Nyssa goes through absolute hell, which in some ways makes her decision to stay behind at the end a bit strange, but also at the same time, I think it is the perfect ending for Nyssa. It just plays into her sort of kind but tenacious nature. Like there's a problem she can fix, so she's going to stay behind and fix it, and she knows it's going to be dangerous and all that kind of thing. But it's a story that doesn't really get resolved. It's just a story that ends on a note of hope, and that note of hope is Nyssa's going to stick around and make things better, hopefully. So yeah, I'm a bigger fan of this one than I used to be. I think as I've got older, I've come to appreciate it more. It is very slow paced. There is a lot of just milling around dark corridors. But ultimately, there's, I think, a really sort of a powerful story in there. And I think it just sets out to do something different. That different thing may not be to everybody's taste, but I don't think it can be denied that it does it well. Apparently, it was a bit of a production nightmare. I have to admit, I don't think that shows on screen. I think what we've got is a very visually striking and interesting story that just takes a bit of time to do its thing, but ultimately does it well. There's some over-the-top acting. Yes, there is. The part one cliffhanger is ridiculous. Some of the daftest, shouty, "Oh my God, we're going to die" acting Doctor Who ever sees. But you know, I can ignore these things. I'm not sure if the B plot about it being at the centre of the universe and related to the Big Bang and all that kind of thing's necessary. I think there's actually enough going on with everything else in it, but the Doctor has to do a bit of discovering as he wanders around the station, I suppose. So there's that. But yeah, overall, good story. Like this one, not quite as strong as it's sort of two predecessors, but it's sort of a nice, unpolished gem in the middle of the season. It's rough around the edges, but that is the nature of the story, I think. So Greg, talk to us about Terminus.
Yeah, I generally agree with you. I think it's the B plot that lets the story down, because that's, I think, the part of it that's the most tedious. And I mean, ultimately, like, I know there's no way to properly represent, like, we're going to have a second Big Bang on a Doctor Who budget, but having like a lever that is slowly moving and someone has to stand there and push on the lever to stop it from moving is just not a visually exciting way to represent this, you know, universe ending threat. And it's a shame, because I think the story itself visually is one of the better ones we've had. I mean, for all that this is, you know, using studio defined corridor sets, I think it works really well. Like, I think it's very convincing as an alien spaceship. I think the costumes are fantastic in this. Like, it's a really good looking story. You know, usually these like sci-fi futuristic stories are the cheap looking ones, but this one looks fantastic. And I don't know like where it ranks in the the budgets for Doctor Who stories, but that works well. I think you can see some of the, you know, the seams of the story. Like, yes, it does take Tegan and Turlough and shove them into the ductwork and leave them there for three episodes. The beginning of the story, I think, drags a little bit, even though I like how it's very early on, like setting up the unsure relationship between Tegan and Turlough. I think it goes on a bit with, you know, Turlough being yelled at by the Black Guardian poking around inside the TARDIS console. But I really like, you know, how the focus then shifts to Nyssa and pretty much stays with her for the rest of the story. And, you know, we talk about abrupt companion departures, and I think the story gets unfairly labeled as one of those when, granted, I don't think it spends a lot of time necessarily foreshadowing that this is about to leave, but it focuses on her in a way that, you know, most stories don't. And so it is definitely like a Nyssa featured story for her last one. And there's, you know, there's interesting little character moments for her in it, especially at the end. Like, her departure scene is lovely, and it works. I think, like, the subtle part of it that works the best is that she goes and she tells Tegan privately that she's leaving first. And she tells her before she even tells the Doctor. And I don't know that we've, you know, well, I mean, I can't say we've never seen anything like that before, but I think, like, to focus on that works quite well and shows a little more thought went into this than, you know, say, like, Leela's departure. I think, you know, Peter Davison's really good in this. I like the downbeat feel to it. I mean, everyone in this story is helpless and hopeless to one degree or another. And I think that works really well. I think, like, the revelation that they're on a plague ship is very good. I just, trying to cram in, like, the end of the universe to it doesn't work. And I think, overall, it is a very slow progressing story, but I think the negative reputation that it has is overblown. I think it's quite solid. It's a good Doctor Who story with a lot of redeeming elements.
I think that, yeah, you're right about the departure. Like, it doesn't take up a lot of story time, but it's not a sudden rushed thing like the Invasion of Time was or whatever. And, like, it makes sense that this is where Nyssa goes. This is what she goes to do. And if you're not a fan of it, it's fine, because Big Finish have brought her back and then got rid of her again. So you can listen to those. One thing about that departure that I think it does particularly well is Turlough's not there. Turlough's got back to the TARDIS and's been shouted at by the Black Guardian while it's going on. Now, Nyssa and Turlough cross over for 8 episodes, and if I'm correct, I think they actually share one line of dialogue across those 8 episodes. Like, these two people do not know each other. So having Turlough sort of not giving her a hug and saying, "Oh, I'm really going to miss you," and shoving him back to the TARDIS instead, it does make perfect sense. It lets us carry on the Black Guardian thing, and it also means that sort of Tegan and Nyssa and the Dot can have that sort of more of a emotionally impactful goodbye. So yeah, I really like the way that's handled. It's, you know, it's sort of, it's a bit low key. It doesn't take up a lot of the episode, but I think it's handled well, certainly. Jimmy, talk to us about Terminus.
I definitely think this story grew on me a lot more this time than previous viewings. I never thought it was bad or anything, but I just don't think I really enjoyed it. Whereas this time, I think it's a really great, solid story. Like, I think there's a few points where things fall apart a bit, like, as you've mentioned, the sort of realization at the end, but of the of the universe-destroying threat, but for the most part, I think it's really brilliant. It's does a great job of setting up Mrs. Departure. Like, she joined with her whole planet dying, and here she's got a whole, well, it's not a world, it's a spaceship or whatever, but it's a whole ton of people in danger of dying, and she thinks she can save them, and she wants to make a difference. I think it works really well. And all the sort of the only negatives I can mention to the story are all just sort of quibbles with how they realised certain things. I mean, I love Tegan and Turlough's bickering and that at the start, but later on it was a bit weird in that scene where Turlough's like, oh, could you kill someone innocent in cold blood? And it's like, the whole previous story and the very start of this story, Tegan is suspicious as hell of Turlough, and like, as she quite rightly should be, but he says all this stuff about, could you kill an innocent person so easy? And she's just like, you're weird. Like, it's like, sure, that's, it is weird to say, but it's like, where's the suspicion and the anger and all that gone? Like, it was a bit like, yeah, he was being weird saying all that, but she was being weird, just sort of not really reacting to it. There were other bits, like the whole, they've got that whole skeletal looking armor that's anti-radiation, and one of the guys throws his helmet off before he wanders into the radiation zone. It's like, why? And the costumes themselves, like the skeletal dark look that they've got is like, it's mostly really cool, but you look at those faces and you don't really notice it at first, but as soon as you notice it, you can't unnotice it. The mustache on this sort of skeleton face between the, it just looks so silly. Like, before you notice it, the costume looks really great, and then as soon as you notice it, you think, no. Oh, dear. And also, there's a bit of more logic stuff, like the Lazars, when Tegan opens the door to, when she thinks she hears Nyssa in there, and like three or four of them have got their hands all over her, and she doesn't catch it, and yet Nyssa barely touches or goes near them, and yet she gets horribly sick straight away. Like, I mean, plot logic, it needed to happen, but it was just a bit weird that, like, oh, it's so dangerous, it's so transmissible, you're going to die if you go near them, and Tegan gets absolutely covered and is fine, and Nyssa just gets it without any trouble, which was, yeah, again, a bit weird. I also think the logic at the end with the computer, like, oh, as soon as that switch flicks, it's going to destroy the universe, and the computer's going to flip the switch, and it just moves it like a centimeter at a time. Like, why? Like, I mean, yeah, obviously they had to do it that way, but it just looks so stupid. And then, like, the skulls on the doors everywhere. Like, yeah, it's great set design. It looks really interesting and scary and whatever, but, like, just thinking of it in plot logic terms, it's like, oh, we're just going to send all these people to this place where they're almost certainly going to die. What should we do to decorate the ship we'll send them in? Skulls. Skulls everywhere. Like, it didn't really make much sense there. And the other thing that didn't quite make sense was Mrs. Departure was mostly really brilliant. Like, they set it up well. She's going to be doing something that feels useful. She's going to be saving lives. Everything about it is great. The departure scene is wonderful, except, like, I know it's, you know, a turn of phrase or whatever, but when she's like, I've enjoyed every moment of my time on the TARDIS, and it's just like, oh, yeah, I'm sure seeing your world destroyed and your dad possessed by the Master was so nice. Like, I mean, sure, I get she's trying to soften the blow of her leaving, but it just comes across a little bit insincere when you're saying you loved every moment when all this horrible stuff happened to you. One other thing about Mrs. Departure that I have to comment on that I've never noticed on previous viewings, but with doing this all in order now, I have. In the scene where she's in the sort of treatment room and she's just sort of waking up and recovering, the music in the background is very similar. It's got to be an intentional callback to Keeper of Trak and that sort of sort of music that she had as her theme in that. And the music that plays when she's in the treatment room, it's a lot slower and a lot darker, but it's the same tune if you listen carefully. And I think that was really good, really well realised. Like, people, whether people noticed or not at the time, it's just, in hindsight, it just really ties back, like, she got her special theme in the first story and she gets the darker version in the story where she leaves. It's, yeah, I think they did a really good job with her departure again, as I say, apart from that one line. But yeah, I definitely enjoyed this story far more than I have on previous viewings. I think I'd probably say of the half of the season we're reviewing now, it's probably my favourite of the stories. But I love Enlightenment and the Five Doctors, so it wouldn't be my favourite of the season overall. But of the stories we've covered today, it's definitely my favourite.
I'm glad we all like Terminus, because it does sort of... it doesn't quite have the reputation it deserves, I think. It's not a Stone Cold classic, and I'm not with you on that, I'm afraid, Jimmy. I do think it's perhaps one of the weaker stories of the Fifth Doctor era, but it's a very good weaker story of the Fifth Doctor era. It does what it does very well. It is just a little bit too slow, and the stuff in the ducks with Tegan and Turlough just drags it right down for me, as does the End of the Universe stuff. But the main story itself is absolutely brilliant. I think this one actually would have benefited from perhaps a new series runtime or pace. You sort of wonder, actually, could this have worked as the two-parter in this season? I'm not by any means saying let's make the King's Demons four parts, because my God... But I actually think this would work better as a shorter story, sort of trim some of the crawling around in ducks, trim the End of the Universe B plot entirely, and I think you probably have a really, really solid two-parter there.
I think two parts, it would be cut down too much. Like, it'd be too quick and you'd lose some character stuff, but three parts, I reckon they could have probably done it. I'd agree it could have been shorter, but I don't think you could cut it quite that far and still get all that you do out of it, I think, personally.
Yeah, perhaps you're right. Perhaps three parts would have been the sweet spot. I mean, obviously, when we get to the McCoy era, we will be able to discuss the merits of three-parters, but we're a way off that still yet. That was Terminus. So that's the half of the season that we set out to discuss in that one. I think it has been particularly strong, actually. You know, Ark of Infinity is a little bit of a weak link, but otherwise, Snake Dance, Mordrin and Terminus are, you know, they're good stories. I do enjoy them. We'll leave it there. We'll return next time, and we'll spend a little bit of time talking about Nyssa and her development and her departure before we move on to the final few stories from this season. So we've got the Black Guardian trilogy to conclude, we've got the season to conclude, and we have got the 20th anniversary special to discuss as well. So looking forward to our next season by season very much. But for now, I will say a big thank you and goodbye to Greg.
Thank you and goodbye.
And a big thank you and goodbye to Jimmy.
Thanks. See you later.
Goodbye now.